Before the 1930s, the Mexican government never had a real coherent plan for industrialization. The economy was primarily rural and agricultural, and most growth was driven by the export of commodities, especially of precious metals like silver. Export-led growth, that is, relying on the export of commodities to fuel overall domestic GDP growth, is typically accompanied by policies that favor open and free trade. In the 1930s, Mexican trade policy started to become much more protectionist, as the government tried to promote industrialization by fostering domestic manufacturing. This is referred to as import substitution industrialization. And the first part of that phrase, import substitution, means that the government would try to create domestic industries to produce the goods that typically had been imported from wealthy countries. So in this video, we're going to explore some of the reasons for this change of policy in the 1930s, and also talk about what kind of problems it eventually created in the Mexican economy. Interestingly, one of the first proponents of using government policy to promote industry was Alexander Hamilton. Hamilton argued in 1790 that new industries, or infant industries, did not have the experience, the expertise, the market size, or the advertising capabilities to be able to compete with well-established foreign firms. He argued that the government should protect these industries through the use of tariffs or import restrictions until they are able to compete on a fair playing field. An important proponent of import substitution industrialization was the Argentine economist Raúl Prebisch. Prebisch argued that Hamilton's argument could be applied much more broadly and not just concentrated on a single industry. Raúl Prebisch became the Secretary General of the United Nations Economic Commission for Latin America, and his arguments had widespread appeal in Latin America and influenced many of the governments in the region to embark on inward-looking policies. One of Prebisch's arguments for import substitution industrialization was that relying on commodities to fuel national growth was a losing prospect because Latin America's terms of trade would fall over time. And terms of trade refers to the dollar price of a country's exports divided by the dollar price of its imports. So Prebisch argued that much of what Latin America exported were actually inferior goods, meaning that rich country demand for them would not increase one-to-one with rich country growth. So let's take an example to explain this a little bit more. So let's take bananas. If a banana importing country, say the United States, becomes 20% richer, it is likely to import more bananas, but it's probably not likely that they're going to import 20% more bananas. So as other countries like the United States grew richer, countries like Honduras that relied on banana exports would not keep pace. Another argument in favor of moving away from commodity-driven growth is that commodity prices are notoriously volatile. Governments typically rely on revenue from commodity exports, either directly, if the commodity is mined or produced by the state, or indirectly, if the government relies on taxing that sector for much of its revenue. So if you have these volatile prices, it makes it really difficult for the government to budget and to be able to plan for the future. Latin America also suffered from undiversified exports, both in terms of the goods that they were exporting and to which countries they were exporting them to. So this made them extremely vulnerable to external shocks, such as war, depression in rich countries, or the creation of synthetic substitutes for the goods they exported. Chile, for example, faced a severe crisis when German scientists came up with a synthetic substitute for nitrates. This was a good which made up the bulk of Chilean exports, and the creation of the synthetic substitute really wiped out that industry. Lastly, it's important to remember that comparative advantage is not a static concept. So dynamic comparative advantage is the main reason that students invest in human capital by going to school and learning new skills. So someone's comparative advantage after they finish college is hopefully and presumably much different than it was when they completed, say, junior high school. So capital is not a natural endowment. Hundreds of years ago, all countries were extremely poor. There's no state of nature where capital and infrastructure just fall from the sky. All of that capital and wealth must be created by market conditions. Import substitution and industrialization in Mexico started in the 1930s, when the Mexican state became increasingly involved in the economy. Eventually, the state would create public enterprises in steel, copper, fertilizer, manufacture of rail cars and trucks, telecommunications, airlines, and electricity, just to name a few. By the 1960s, the scope of protection had really increased in Mexico. For instance, in 1965, 25% of total imports needed a government license. In 1970, 80% did. Approximately 1,000 import categories were added to the controlled list every year in the 1960s. This slide gives the effective protection rates in 1960 in Mexico. But before we talk about the numbers, let me talk briefly about what we mean about the effective rate of protection. So instead of just a single tariff measure, the effective rate of protection is used to measure the real amount of protection given to a particular industry. So what that means is it's how much extra domestic manufacturers can charge and still be competitive with imported goods. And here you can see that agricultural goods receive the least amount of protection, which is not surprising since the Mexican government wanted to promote industry and move away from an agricultural economy. Durable goods, on the other hand, receive 90% of protection. So durable good is one that yields utility over time rather than being completely consumed in one use. The highest rates were, though, on non-durables, like beverages and tobacco, which were greater than 120%. One of the biggest problems with the infant industry argument is that the infant industries never grow up. For political reasons, the protection ends up not being temporary, but relatively permanent. And this results in a captive market for monopolies. For instance, in Mexico, by 1982, all imports needed a permit from the government. This results in less overall innovation, high prices, lower quality goods, and poor customer service. So these monopolies don't face any competition, they don't have to compete with foreign firms, and they respond accordingly. Also, state enterprises were extremely inefficient and costly. From 1971 to 75, real spending by public enterprises in Mexico grew at an average annual rate of 18%. And real public sector expenditures almost doubled from 77 to 81 and represented 41% of GDP by 1981. One of the best introductions to import substitution industrialization in general, and also in particular to Latin America, is by Eliana Cardoso and Anne Helwege in their book Latin America's Economy. If you want more information specifically on import substitution in Mexico, there's an article by Antonio Aspera in 1977, Import Substitution in Mexico, Past and Present. There's also an article by Bella Balassa in 1983 called Trade Policy in Mexico, and some of the numbers that I presented in this video come from Aldo Flores Quiroga, Proteccionismo versus Libre Cambio,